The sulphurous, mineralized waters of the subterranean pool were possessed of extraordinary qualities. Every noon and evening, Santen soaked in their heat, and the manner in which her birth injuries healed was almost miraculous. Of course, she was in superb physical health, without an ounce of superfluous fat or flesh upon her, and Shasa's neat, lean body and the ease of his delivery was a consequence of this. Furthermore, the San looked upon parturition as such a routine process that Hani neither pampered her nor encouraged her to treat herself as an invalid. Young muscles, elastic and well-exercised, swiftly regained their resilience and strength. Her skin, not overstretched, was free of stria, and her belly swiftly shrank back into its greyhound profile. Only her breasts were swollen hard with copious milk, and Shasa gorged and grew like one of the desert plants after rain. Then again there was the pool and its waters. "It is strange," Hani told her. "The nursing mothers who drink this water always grow children with bones as hard as rock and teeth that shine like polished ivory. It's one of those blessings of the spirits that guard this place." At noon the sun struck through one of the apertures in the domed roof of the cavern, a solid white shaft of light through the steam-laden air, and Santan loved to bask in it, moving across the pool as the beam swung, to keep in its charmed circle of light. She lay chin-deep in the seething green water, and listened to Shasa snuffling and mewing in his sleep. She had wrapped him in the chemsbok skin and laid him on the edge beside the pool where she could see him merely by turning her head. The bottom of the pool was lined with gravel and pebbles. She scooped up handfuls of them and held them up in the sunlight, and they gave her a special kind of pleasure, for they were strange and beautiful. There were veined agates, water-worn and smooth, swallows' eggs, stones of soft blue with lines of red through them, or pink or yellow, and jaspers and carnelians in 100 shades of burgundy, shiny black onyx, and tiger's eyes of gold barred with iridescent waves of shifting colour. "I will make a necklace for Hani, a gift to thank her from Shasa." She began to collect the prettiest stones with the most interesting and unusual shapes. "I need a centerpiece for the necklace," she decided, and she dredged handfuls of gravel and washed them in the hot green waters, then examined them in the sunlight until at last she found exactly what she was searching for. It was a colourless stone, clear as water, but when it caught the sunlight it contained a captive rainbow, an internal fire that burned with all the colours of the spectrum. Santen spent a long, lazy hour in the pool, turning the stone slowly in the beam of sunlight to make it flash and sparkle, staring into its depths with delight, watching it explode into wondrous cascades of light. The stone was not large, only the size of one of the ripe mongongo fruit, but it was a symmetrical, many-sided crystal, perfect for the centerpiece of the necklace. She designed Hani's necklace with infinite care, spending many hours while Shasa nursed at her breast, arranging and rearranging her collection of pebbles, until at last she had them in the order which most pleased her. Yet still she was not entirely satisfied, for the colourless central stone, so sparkling and regular in shape, made all the other coloured stones seem somehow drab and uninteresting. Nevertheless, she began to experiment in stringing the pebbles in a necklace, and here she immediately encountered problems. One or two of the pebbles were so soft that by dint of persistent effort and many worn-out bone augers, she was finally able to drill a stringing hole through them. Others were brittle and shattered, and others again were too hard. In particular, the sparkling crystal resisted her best efforts, and remained absolutely unblemished after she had broken a dozen bone tools upon it. She appealed to Owa for assistance, and once he understood what she was working on, he was boyishly enthusiastic. They experimented and met with a failure a dozen times before they finally worked out a means of cementing the harder stones onto the plaited Sansevieria twine with acacia gum. Santan began to assemble the necklace and almost drove Owa to distraction in the process, for she discarded 50 lengths of twine, "This is too thick," she would say, "or this is not strong enough." And Owa, who, when working on his own weapons and tools, was also a perfectionist, took the problem very seriously. Finally, San Tan unravelled the hem of her canvas skirt, and by plaiting the threads with the Sansevieria fibres, they had a string for the necklace that was fine and strong enough to satisfy both of them. When the necklace was at last finished, Owa's self-satisfaction could not have been more overbearing had he conceived, planned, and executed the project entirely on his own. It was more of a pectoral than a necklace, with a single string around the back of the neck and the stones woven together in a plait-like decoration which hung on the breast with a big crystal in the centre and a mosaic of coloured agates and jaspers and beryls surrounding it. Even San Tan was delighted with her handiwork. "It's turning out better than I had hoped," she told Owa, speaking in French, and holding it up and turning it to catch the sunlight. "Not as good as Monsieur Cartier." She remembered her father's wedding gift to her mother, which he had allowed her to wear on her birthdays, "but not too bad for a wild girl's first effort in a wild place." They made a little ceremony of the presentation, and Hani sat beaming like a little amber-coloured hobgoblin, while San Tan thanked her for being such a paragon of a grandmother and the best midwife of the San. But when she placed the gift around the old woman's neck, it seemed too big and weighty for the frail, wrinkled body. "Ah, old man, you are so proud of that knife of yours, but it is as nothing to this," Hani told Owa as she stroked the necklace lovingly. "This is a true gift. Look you, now I wear the moon and the stars around my throat." She refused to remove it. It thumped against her breastbone as she wielded her digging stick or stooped to gather the mongongo nuts. When she crouched over the cooking fires, it dangled between the empty pouches of her swinging dugs. Even in the night, as she slept with her head cradled on her own bare shoulder, San Tan looked across from her own shelter and saw the necklace shining on her chest, and it seemed to weigh the little old body down to the earth.